but kind of felt like a Dante's Inferno or like a another circle of hell, and now we're living in that too.
I'm Janine Chenard, and welcome to my final project for my seminar, Luis Buñuel and His Legacy. Today I'm going to explore El Ángel Exterminador, or The Exterminating Angel, a Luis Buñuel film from 1962. The Exterminating Angel is an unusual film, and it suddenly feels relevant to the global health crisis we've been living through this semester as we've all been in quarantine. When COVID-19 hit in early March, everyone at Oberlin's campus rapidly adapted to an unprecedented situation. Every student who could return home suddenly was completing their semester from their bedrooms. I was in complete shock as I threw my stuff into my boxes, said hasty goodbyes to my friends, and I didn't know if I would ever return to Oberlin. I soon found myself in my parents' home in Novi, Michigan, continuing my coursework as much as possible, and of course, watching Buñuel's most famous films. After I watched The Exterminating Angel, I couldn't get it out of my head. The plot reflected the days on end I've spent at my house, but at an absolute extreme. The Mexican film follows a group of friends who attend a lavish dinner party at a beautiful mansion. All of the dinner guests stay late into the night, falling asleep in the music room on the couches on the floor. By morning, however, their friends realize they can't leave the room for some inexplicable reason. Days slowly pass, and with no food and water, the baffled inhabitants of the room grow angry, thirsty, and hungry. Eventually, the guests bust open a water pipe, saving them from thirst. Other tragedies befall them in the room, however. An elderly man dies, a couple commits suicide in a closet, and the group becomes increasingly hostile towards one another. Even as it seems the group will never escape, the guests recreate their movements from the night they became trapped in the room, and everyone can finally leave. In the film's final moments, however, we see the dinner guests together in a church, but as the service ends, no one can leave the church. The final scene cuts from the church and shows a group of rioters being brutally shot by the police. Buñuel's story about a group of friends trapped together felt a little too close to home for my liking. After living on Oberlin's campus for the last 4 years, I was suddenly quarantined with my parents, Brett and Brenda, who are working from home, my sister Claire, who is finishing her semester of college off campus, and my girlfriend Cleo, who came to visit me for a week for my spring break but then decided not to return to her New York City apartment. None of us expected to spend such a long period of time in the house together, much like the dinner guests stuck in the music room for weeks on end. I wondered what my family would think of The Exterminating Angel, as it suddenly mirrored our own experiences in quarantine. As I discussed the film with my parents and Cleo, we reflected on the sudden change in our daily lives and the film's meaning. So my mom watched The Exterminating Angel, and it's been a very strange end to the semester because I've been home kind of unexpectedly at the end of my senior year. And so I've been able to share some classwork that I might not normally share with my family, and I thought this would be an interesting experience to have my mom and the rest of my family watch the movies I've been watching all semester. So what did you think of the movie?
I thought it was interesting, but I had a lot of questions after I watched it because I didn't understand some things.
Yeah, I think that's an experience I've been having all semester after watching these movies, because I'm not really a movie person, and I think maybe I've learned that about myself in this class, that that's kind of maybe not what I personally love.
Well, I was kind of prepared not to like it, but I actually liked it quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of slow in the middle, but I thought the premise itself was interesting, and I thought that there was some very clever parts to the movie where they, when the various characters were trying to exit the room, and after they were trapped and they got distracted by conversation, and I thought it was sort of well done the way that it wasn't like an invisible barrier that they bounced off of. It was their mind was being tricked into thinking of something different, which I thought was quite clever, actually.
What would you say surrealism is? Would you define that?
I feel like it's just it's so random. It's like kind of whatever the filmmaker wants to do with the...
Like it can be anything they want.
His own medium, yeah. It can be whatever they want to make of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really up for interpretation. There's no right or wrong answer when you're watching the films.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think when I was talking with my mom, that was something that she was kind of concerned about, like having the right answer of like how to interpret the film. And I think that's something that is stressful when you're doing analysis, but in this format, you have to kind of consider that there's not necessarily one correct way to interpret it, and then you have to just decide that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you either like it or you don't, and then you kind of go from there.
Can you maybe reflect on how your life has changed given
the
quarantine now?
When I became an empty nester, my life really slowed down a lot. And I know this sounds kind of trivial, but you know, if I cleaned something, it stayed clean for a long time. If I bought food in the refrigerator, it was there when I went to go get it.
Yeah.
And I've had to sort of readapt to living with a family, living with a family again. And there's lots of positives about that. Like, I never thought I would get this chance again.
To have us all home.
To have everybody home again. And I was a little worried about it at first because, you know, in high school, you and Claire didn't get along great. And I feel like that everybody's been pretty flexible and got along well while they're home. And I know I've talked to other families and that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, I was talking to one of my friends from Oberlin, and she was saying, she's still on campus, but she was talking to friends who had gone back home. They were like, if our old family pet dies right now, like, we'll have nothing to talk about, because we all just look at the old pet and, like, talk about the old pet. But if it's gone, we have no connecting link between us anymore.
Yeah. Well, I'm really glad that our old family pet survived to see you all home again.
Yeah, I'm glad too.
She's been very calm. She's thriving, and she loves having you here.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's re-energized her.
Maybe so.
Well, of course, you know, we have been living here in the house, you know, sort of all the time. Mm-hmm. And of course, it could be worse. We are allowed to go outdoors and go walking, of course, but if we weren't, you know, your whole experience would be in, you know, maybe 8 rooms or so, and that definitely has this strange sense of repetitiveness and strangeness associated with it. And of course, that was unexpected when I started to watch the show, because I wasn't expecting them to be sort of stuck in one place, and it did feel like, it felt like, you know, essentially what we're going through now. Yeah.
My professor put the movie on the syllabus before this all happened, so it's interesting to think about what kind of experience it would be watching it.
Yeah,
it was, if this hadn't happened, you know, it'd be a completely different situation.
Well, at least you wouldn't have something recent to reflect on, actually, when you're watching it. But it was still very interesting, because I when I was watching it, I was thinking, of course, you know, what was the director trying to, what story was he trying to tell? And I kept thinking of human nature and how the various people were reacting and how it drew out sort of the worst in people and perhaps the best in people.
Do you notice that people are adjusting to social norms in a different way because of the pandemic when you're at work? Do people stand farther apart when they're talking to each other?
I think it's made some people very nervous. Like, for example, some people will come to the front to pay, and they'll kind of just push their cart towards the cashier because they don't want to step close to them.
Like, they don't want to, but still, they touched all the stuff that the cashier is about to scan.
They did, but it's all a mental thing.
Right.
So I guess they think as long as they're not close to them, then they're safe. They're at a safe distance. So that makes it better. But you're right. Like, they're still touching everything. They still made the decision to come to that store. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people there, regardless of people being at a stay at home order or not.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. To me, plants don't really seem very essential, but
but people still want to do what they want to do. And I think in some ways we can relate that back to the movie, and that people do try to maintain the same sort of life that they had before.
They do, and I think a lot of people are trying to find more hobbies that maybe they didn't have time for before, and that kind of comes into play with maybe buying plants, or maybe they want to buy yarn, or something like that, something more crafty that you can do at home, but that still requires a certain level of human interaction when you want to purchase stuff like that.
Right. And how do you think that in the film, the norms change for the people who are in quarantine?
What do you mean?
When I say norms, I mean, do they interact with each other in a way that is different than their lives when they are able to go about and do everything they would like to? Or when they're trapped in the room, are they kind of adjusting themselves? Or how do they change during this experience?
I think everyone had a different reaction when, as the days went on within the film. Like, one woman, she really just wanted life to be over.
Yeah.
And that was her own kind of reaction. And I think some people were more driven to kind of get out of that situation. Like, when they tried to get water, some people were just already had given up at that point.
And didn't care if they were surviving.
Yeah. So I think it really shows some people's resilience and maybe kind of drive to get out of certain situations like that. And it's just, that's very unpredictable, I think, until you're actually thrown into that sort of situation.
It's also interesting to just think about what kind of resources you would have in one room and how you could live off just the things in that one room. Because I remember when I was little, I always used to imagine, like, what would happen if, like, just the room I was in, like, ended up on a deserted island?
Well,
and it's like, how would you survive?
That's really interesting, and I will probably think about that more now that you've brought that up, because, you know, I've always been, like, the person who keeps, like, granola bars and water in their car and a first aid kit. And so, like, you know, it's, like, my go bag in my car. And, you know, I don't do it as much now, but when you guys were little, I always wanted to make sure I had what I needed wherever I was.
Yeah, you were very prepared.
So, but now, like, that you brought that point up, I'm like, which room would I pick if I did get trapped in my house?
I would definitely pick the kitchen.
Yeah, And, you know, something I really wondered about, like they just happened to have a bathroom off of that room. And, like, that was super convenient because, you know.
Oh, I don't remember that. They had a bathroom.
Didn't they keep opening a door and going into a bathroom?
I think it was the closet. I don't think it was a bathroom.
So what were they doing in the closet?
I think they're going to the bathroom.
Going to the bathroom in the closet. Yeah. Okay.
I don't think they had
a... 'Cause that never, like, you know.
They don't really address that very much.
They don't address it. And, you know, they never address that in any TV show or movie.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
They do have to find water, though. Like, they do find water when they, like, take the axe or, like, they beat up the wall.
Yes, they break the pipe open. Yeah. Yep.
Something I've been considering all semester is what these movies actually mean. And I've been wondering how we can consider Boonwell's movies when they're so different from content that we normally consume. And throughout this interview, I've been wondering how we can consider analysis itself when we complete it during unusual or unexpected times. Is the analysis we do in this pandemic different than what we would normally think about? How does our consideration of these movies change? And everyone wants to know what certain symbols mean during the movie, or why the police shoot into the crowd at the end. But how can we consider these sort of symbols when the director once said that his movies have no deeper meaning? How do you reckon with attempting to analyze something that you don't have the context to analyze always? These are questions I'm considering throughout the whole semester.
So there's a quote from Boonwell in an interview he did. And he says that, "I first thought that the title had a subtle relationship with the plot, although I wasn't sure how. Later, I interpret it as that in society today, men are less and less in agreement, and that is why they fight with each other. But why don't they understand each other? Why don't they get out of these misunderstandings? And in the movie, it's the same. Why don't they work together to reach a solution to get out of the room?" So what do you think about that quote? And how do you see that play out in the movie, maybe? So, going back to the title, who do you think the exterminating angel is in this movie? Or is it not necessarily one?
I still can't connect it to exterminating angel. I mean...
Well, I think maybe we could also say, like, the outside force that's keeping them trapped in the room, maybe that could also be the exterminating angel.
But are they trying to say the exterminating angel is internal? Because, I mean, obviously there was no actual exterior force keeping them in the room.
I don't know. I think maybe that could be a biblical reference, maybe.
Mm-hmm. How so?
I mean, angels, are very prominent in, in with Christianity.
Yeah.
Why are you laughing?
I'm not seeing where you're going with this yet, but let's keep going. I want
to
hear your
analogy. Well, maybe something happened to the angel. And now they're looking for vengeance and they're exterminating these people. Or it could be Boonwell. He could be the angel. He could be the one who's...
He is the exterminating angel. I kind of like that. I think I can see him as...
Yeah, he has this power.
He does have this power. He is God in this movie and that he gets to
It's part of that surrealist approach.
That he has the control.
Yeah, he's got the power.
Yeah.
He can just write in the script whatever he wants. He can, portray whatever he wants.
Who did you think was the exterminating angel, or what was the force that represented the title of the movie?
Yeah, that was strange. I mean, it was interesting because the old man in the beginning, he had said, you know, I won't be taken by the angel, by the exterminating angel. And he said that, you know, and I really could not make head nor tail of that, actually, because there really wasn't a lot of exterminating that went on. You know, I mean, I was thinking if that were going to happen, that they would get knocked off one by one or something.
Like they would all die.
Or at least many
of them. Like the outside force would be the exterminating angel.
Yeah. And, you know, that was like a trap. And then they were going to, human nature would pick them off one by one.
Mm.
You know, so.
But they don't die.
Because, you know, they had found that box of drugs and I thought people might get poisoned by the drugs.
Oh.
Or, you know,
Well, they had the doctor.
Right, but I was envisioning all kinds of things like that because of the title, but it didn't really...
But not much really happens when they're trapped. No. They don't do very much.
No, and they didn't really... And even though they behaved badly, they didn't behave very badly. They weren't really violent towards each other.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, they were quite civil. I mean, I can't imagine being trapped in one room with 20 people for 30 days.
Something interesting that I've been thinking about with this movie is that before everyone is trapped in the house, most of the servants leave, and...
I did wonder about that.
Right. I'm thinking about, that's kind of the, they're saved from being in this horrible situation, but it's kind of the reverse to today.
Right.
Rich people can stay
in
their houses, and working people have to go to their jobs or have to be frontline workers. And so that's kind of an interesting disconnection
inversion.
There. Yeah.
Inversion, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So... I wondered why, why did the butler stay when all the other help left?
Right.
So how did he, I don't know, get sucked into that vortex?
I don't know. Maybe because he's closer with the people of the house, or?
I mean, and what would they have done without him? I mean, how would they...
Because he was helping them throughout the whole situation.
It seemed like he was sort of, you know, the practical, you know, member of the group.
Mm-hmm.
There's another quote from Boonwell, which is really interesting, where he's talking about how he believes if there was, a baptism party of a working class group of people... And about 50 people went to this party, and then they found they couldn't leave the party. They would be able to leave the house much quicker than the group of friends portrayed in this movie because they're working class people, and they would be able to assess their situation and work together more quickly.
Well, I mean, they were pretty fatuous, mostly. I mean, they most of them didn't have any sort of constructive, you know, direction to give to others, you know, that was mostly bickering and so on.
And then if we go to the ending, that also becomes interesting because it's like they're trapped in a church, and then if the title is the exterminating angel.
Right. So is there religious context that, you know...
We don't see them pray, I think, at all through the whole movie. I don't
remember I mean,
them praying.
We didn't see them pray, but we did see them sort of follow religious... ritual in the church.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I didn't know if someone was trying to punish these people by keeping them in the room.
it's a cycle. Like, just because that one event ended doesn't mean it won't happen again. Like, and then when they panned out of the church, then we saw another kind of war going on outside. I'm not really sure what that was referring to.
Well, I definitely felt like it was the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It, or I should say, it felt like the end of the movie when they were able to leave the room.
Mm-hmm.
Although you did wonder, like, would their social relationship survive? And so there was a part of me that thought, well, maybe that would be illustrated in some way. But so then when they were at the church, I was thinking actually that they were at a funeral service for. My first thought was they were at a funeral service for the people who had died. No mention was ever made of those people.
The three people who died.
Yeah, the two people who killed themselves there, which is, of course, if it was Catholic, they may not be able to be buried in the church if they killed each other.
Yeah.
Killed themselves. But anyway, that was my first thought, that it was some kind of a funeral service. But that wasn't obvious to me. It was a lot of ornate things there, so I got the impression it was just a normal service, and so, mm-hmm. When they got trapped, I kind of sensed it, you know, just a little bit.
You're
when
like,
they were
oh,
leaving.
They're gonna be stuck.
Yeah, because there was a crowd at the door on the way out and everything.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh no, like it was an experiment of so many people, and then it's becoming an experiment of more people.
You're thinking about it as an experiment. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean that's the way, you know. Because of course you don't believe in the fantasy part of it, so I was thinking that it was like a petri dish that the director had set up
to examine human nature.
Yeah, to illustrate human nature. And of course with a much larger group, it's going to get way more chaotic. And
right.
Who's going to be the leader, and
mm-hmm.
you know,
how will people interact
and
with
and it also, of course, then would have religious people there, which would create a completely different dynamic, and how would they act, and
mm-hmm.
you know, that sort of thing.
I bet it was interesting if the first thing they did was go to church, because we hadn't seen them pray at all during the whole movie, really.
Right, yeah.
And
no,
then suddenly
yeah.
they're like, yeah, let's go straight to church.
Yeah, nobody, I don't recall anybody really mentioning their faith at mm-hmm. all during their time when they were trapped, which was a long time,
mm-hmm.
you know, by the movie. And, you know, for me, the strangest thing in the whole movie for me was not getting trapped in the church, because that's very Twilight Zone,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you will, unexplainable. But at the end, when they were on the outside, I was thinking that you'd be seeing people going to the gate and, again, being baffled and everything. But then the soldiers came in and they were shooting guns, and it was kind of chaotic on the outside, and I...
Mm-hmm.
That really didn't add up to me anyway.
I thought a natural ending for the film was when they realized they could escape by sort of rewinding and replaying the ending.
You mean the beginning?
They went back to the beginning and retraced their steps to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was going to be the end of the movie, that they retraced their steps.
It does seem like it should be the end when they finally like run out of the room. And you're
right.
Like, that's it. They're like out now.
And so when they went to the church and they, I thought maybe they were like, sort of at church to be thankful for
being
out of the room.
Mm.
And then it happened again. And I was like, I don't understand why it's happening again.
Yeah. I don't think I have any good responses for that either. People are getting fatigued with quarantine. They really are just sick of staying in their houses as the weather gets nicer. And that sort of invisible line here is the virus. And that if it hasn't affected you directly, it's hard to maybe consider how devastating it is. And I think that sort of reflects to these friends' appearances in the movie, and that they have a difficult time contextualizing how they're changing.
Yeah, and I think for them, though, they didn't even have really a sense of time beyond the clock that was in the room, because there was no windows in the dining room.
Mm-hmm.
I think they had, like, black curtains also. So
they couldn't see sunlight.
Yeah, it didn't really mm-hmm. matter what was going on outside. It just mattered that
they were trapped.
After listening to my family's thoughts, I've been reflecting on how the world we live in reflects Buñuel's surrealist vision of enclosure. Today certainly feels surreal. The New York Times headlines read as if they're from a dystopian novel. A headline from May 13, 2020 reads, "The coronavirus may never go away," a top World Health Organization official said, warning against expecting a quick vaccine. And children are becoming ill from a mysterious syndrome related to the virus. The President of the United States recently wondered aloud on an official government broadcast if a possible cure to the virus could be injecting household disinfectants into our bodies. And yet, the world, and Americans in my state, Michigan, are somehow desperately protesting to leave the safety of quarantine. I think we may find ourselves much like Buñuel's dinner guests that believe they have escaped their enclosure just to become trapped in an even worse nightmare. By June, as the worldwide toll of the virus continues to rise, we will be desperate for the entrapment of our music room rather than face the consequences of enclosure in the church.